The end of the article isn't the end of the story. The Journal podcast goes behind the scenes with reporters and covers everything from the Mormon Church's $100 billion fund to coronavirus. Listen to The Journal on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, April 23rd. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. The digital divide means it's harder for some people to access the internet than others. That's been the case for a while, but the pandemic has forced that issue right back into the spotlight as millions of people attempt to work, learn, and connect online. Our reporter Ryan Tracy will join us to explain what lawmakers are trying to do about it after these headlines. Your iPhone might be vulnerable to cyber attacks. The digital security company ZecOps says sophisticated hackers may be targeting a bug in the iPhone's email app. The attacks date back at least 2 years, and it's not your typical malware. Normally, phone hacks require the user to take some sort of action to download malicious software, like clicking on a message or visiting a website. But this software downloads without you doing anything at all. Hackers send a specially crafted email, and the bug is triggered when the message is downloaded by the phone's email reader. The news comes as a setback for Apple, which has long been considered the gold standard for security and user privacy. Between your Netflix, Disney Plus, HBO, and other subscriptions, the price of streaming TV and movies is getting pretty high lately. And some people apparently don't want to pay for it. Our cybersecurity reporter David Uberti says digital piracy websites have seen a more than 30% increase in site traffic since the pandemic began. But it's unclear if that bump will last.
I mean, the researchers who I spoke with certainly said that the rise in demand right now is unprecedented. I mean, as of this moment, it's too early to say how long these lockdowns would last. So for the foreseeable future, experts expect this to last for the coming months or so. You know, beyond the rest of 2020, it's too early to say whether piracy will revert to pre-COVID levels.
Of course, pirating content is illegal, pandemic or not. Governments and tech companies have been attempting to crack down, but it's harder than it sounds.
Cracking down on online piracy is extremely difficult. You know, on one hand, you have social media companies that try to limit the spread of content. They basically crack down on individual URLs or perhaps apps that people flock to get this stuff. The other way in which people go after it is law enforcement agencies try to track down individuals behind pirated content. These are people who are either selling illicit devices, they're selling subscriptions to illicit streaming services, or they're trying to basically illegally share mass files on the internet. So it's very difficult in large part because it's a very international crime. So you could have people selling devices from a country in Asia while servers are existing in Europe, while the consumers who are actually consuming the content are in the United States.
And finally, we've been bringing you updates on earnings season all week. AT&T is the latest to report its earnings. Before the opening bell on Wednesday, AT&T said it had added 160,000 phone subscribers. But it lost nearly a million TV subscribers, and its growth rate fell. AT&T is hoping next month's launch of its new streaming service, HBO Max, will help. But in the meantime, the company has pulled its earnings guidance for the foreseeable future. Up next, how the pandemic is bringing more attention to the digital divide. Our reporter Ryan Tracy will join us to explain how lawmakers are trying to bridge the gap. That's after the break.
When the world is at a standstill, facts can move us forward. Facts help us make decisions and bring us together even as we're apart. The Wall Street Journal has the facts in these uncertain times. Get the latest on the coronavirus outbreak with free coverage of the crisis and its impact on the economy, politics, culture, and daily life. Find the clarity you need with America's most trusted news source. Visit WSJ.com and stay informed.
As you know, we've been working from home, as have millions of people around the country, and they've been using their home internet to work and also to go to school for kids and to apply for jobs if they've lost one, or even loans or unemployment online. The problem is that, as we all have experienced, those internet connections, especially when that many people are trying to use them all at once, don't work so well, especially for people who don't have high-speed internet at home. That's because the country's broadband infrastructure is pretty outdated in a lot of places, and attempts to modernize it have been stalled over the years. But the pandemic has one silver lining, perhaps. It has increased the urgency for lawmakers to implement policies to bridge the digital divide. That is, the gap between those who have high-speed internet access at home and those who don't. Our tech policy reporter, Ryan Tracy, has been looking into this, and he joins us now. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Ryan, can you just set the stage for us right now? What is the state of our current broadband infrastructure at the moment?
So there are lots of places in America, lots of geographic areas in America don't have the kind of high-speed internet that's available in cities. You've kind of got two problems happening at once. One is the problem of access. There are rural places that just simply don't have it. Maybe they have a fiber optic cable running through the main street of the town, but not on the side streets. Or maybe the house is located in a mountainous area where the wire doesn't run and the wireless signals don't reach. So that's one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is affordability and in the fact that, you know, even in places where broadband is available, millions of people don't subscribe to it. And that might be because they can't afford it, or they can only afford either a cell phone plan or a broadband plan and they choose the cell phone plan. So, you know, right now we've got policymakers in Washington realizing amidst this pandemic that, you know, broadband is an essential thing. You need it like you need electricity or like you need a telephone. And they're talking about how to do something about that.
Yeah, that's been a real conversation that's been going on for a long time, actually. It feels like it's just hitting home now as we are all staying home all the time and we don't have the access to the internet at work or at school. This question of considering the internet part of infrastructure, part of the necessity of daily life. I know that FCC Chairman Ajit Pai has been talking about this since he took office in 2017. A lot of lawmakers have been talking about this as well, but there seems to have been very little action so far. Why has that been so difficult to get across or to negotiate?
Well, there's been a lot of money spent. I was just looking at some numbers from the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, and, you know, we're talking about tens of billions of dollars over the past decade, at least, that have been sent out the door from the government to telecom companies to build these networks in places that don't have them. And, you know, the FCC is expected to come out with a report this week that will say that more people have broadband access than the last time it issued this report a year ago. So in other words, the agency is saying it's making progress on this issue, that the federal dollars that have been spent are doing something. Clearly, though, you know, as we hear all across the country, there are still people that lack this service. And so the question is, why have we not made this service universal? You know, a lot of that boils down to, for example, which parts of the country are going to get the money? Is it better spent on a subsidy for poor people in a city or on building, you know, a fiber optic cable down a rural road to maybe only serve one or two homes? Ideally, you'd have both, but you know, certainly there's a limited amount of money. So there's some conflict there around kind of how the government sets the policy to spend all this money. And there are also, you know, some much more complex questions around how the money's collected and other policy issues. And it's really, it gets tangled up often when Congress considers this issue.
It feels like this is, you know, we talked about the fact that this is now kind of taken on a new urgency during the pandemic. But I think it's really important to note this is not just about people having access so that they can work from home. There are some real challenges here, both regarding health and access to even something as basic as education.
Right. So we spoke with, for our story this week, a superintendent at a school district in upstate New York, and you know, he said that fewer than half of the families in his district have access to high-speed internet. What that means is that some of the children who are learning from home are getting to interact with their teacher through Zoom or video chat or whatever it is. And other kids, their parents maybe have to drive by the school building and pick up paper packets to then take home with them. And the kid has to talk to the teacher on the phone once a week. to see how things are going. So that's a different experience for those two kids. And it could potentially lead to one kid learning more than the other. And obviously, no one thinks that's a good thing. No one thinks that's fair. And everybody ought to have this access. You know, there's also just the broader question of economic development. If you're a small business and you are going to run your store online, clearly you're going to want to be located in a place that has high-speed internet. So if you're if you're a rural area that's trying to attract businesses to your town, this is a really tough issue if you don't have it.
So who's leading the charge right now, and what action can we expect next?
Well, certainly the lawmakers, the members of Congress that we interviewed for this story are more optimistic than they were before the pandemic that something could happen on this issue. First of all, Congress is, all bets are off in terms of spending money, right? This is a massive, dealing with this pandemic has opened the floodgates. And so there's, broadband isn't the only thing. There's a lot of different policy issues where, you know, some people are seeing an opportunity to get funding where you don't have to explain, you know, how it's going to break the budget or not. You know, that's sort of out the window.
The budget's already broken.
Right. And also, you know, clearly this issue in particular, this crisis has made it clear that broadband is essential. And, you know, we talked to Senator Capito from West Virginia, who she's been hearing from a lot of doctors in her state about how they're having trouble running their businesses online. You know, she said the urgency on this issue is triple times what it has been for her. She's a Republican. We also talked to Mike Doyle, who's a congressman from Pittsburgh, a Democrat in the House, and he said the same thing, basically, that he thinks, you know, this has made it clear that this issue needs to be at the front of the line. It doesn't seem like this is imminent, so Congress this week is expected to pass more funding for small businesses and take care of some of the more sort of emergency issues related to the pandemic. And the sources we spoke with for this story said that they expect later in the year, maybe in the summer, for Congress to come back and work on a, you know, kind of a more economic stimulus, mid to longer term type legislation to help the economy, and that broadband could be a piece of that.
Tech policy reporter Ryan Tracy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, before we go, we are still taking your work from home tech stories and questions, and our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be back with us later this week to share her favorite tips and solutions. You can call us and leave a voice message at the number in the description, or you can email Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com. And that was your tech news briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.